as creatives, we know that we can use our art to share a message, express emotions, and shed light on topics that we're passionate about. Today, I'm talking to the folks behind Elizabeth Blue, a film that does that and more here on On the Fly Filmmaking.
Welcome to Popcorn Talk, featuring movie discussion, news, and interviews. Popcorn Talk, we talk movies.
Hey everyone, I am Mary Lou Mandel, your host today for On the Fly Filmmaking, and I am talking with fabulous folks behind Elizabeth Blue, a wonderful movie about mental illness. I'm talking with Vincent Sabella and Anna Schaefer.
Hello, Mary Lou.
Thank you for joining me here today.
Thanks for having us.
I know we got to experience a little bit of LA on the flyness here. Sometimes things are down to the wire. You cannot escape the LA traffic. You can't do it.
Horrendous.
Yeah.
An hour and 45 minutes.
Oh, I believe it. So that's something for our creatives that are out there, that like one day when you move to LA to become a filmmaker, work in the entertainment industry, you will deal with traffic.
You see, but I actually gave myself enough time and left on time.
So, what are you trying to say?
Awesome. Well, I love that you guys are obviously very close. You're obviously very close. So Anna and Vincent have just released this movie. It was like in September.
Yes.
Elizabeth Blue has been out.
It opened September 22nd.
Yes.
In 10 cities.
It was fantastic. Beautiful, beautiful movie that is helping to raise money for mental illness awareness.
Yes.
And I thought it was a very sensitive and beautiful way of shedding light on this topic, because it's something that is a big topic in our news today, in our world today, and I'm just really glad that you're creating art that is shedding light on this. So thank you.
Well, thank
for doing
you
doing the good work.
Well, thank you very much for saying so.
Yes, awesome. So before we get into talking too much about the movie, I want to talk to you two individually about your careers in entertainment. So ladies first.
Great.
Anna, so you are an actress. You started as a model, as the internet told me.
Sure, we could say that.
Yeah?
I modeled when I was 14,
oh, okay.
15, 16.
Great. So you could still model now. I saw you in a fabulous gown at a gala. Was it? It was like this big red gown. It was
in
beautiful.
Cannes, Cannes Film Festival.
Oh, it was
yeah.
wonderful. So talk to us a little bit about your career to this point. Like, how did you get into acting?
So I came to LA in 2008,
mm-hmm.
And it was sort of this, I knew I wanted to act for a very long time, since I was like six, but it took me all this time to sort of gain the courage to make the move, and I remember waking up one morning and literally telling my mom, I'm going to LA.
Yeah, from where?
From New York.
Okay.
And there were a lot of tears mm-hmm. involved, and for my mom, and then I remember packing my bags and just coming here and not knowing a single person, not having any agent or manager or anything like that, I didn't know where to start.
Yeah.
And the first year was a whirlwind. I was sort of finding, because it also, like, you're trying to figure out where you're gonna live. Is it like Silver Lake or Los Feliz, or, you know,
and
there's
it's a complicated city
with the traffic. Also you're like, wait, where's more central? So I tried a few different places, and you know, I remember signing with this agent and going on my first audition like 3-4 months into living here. And I was so nervous that I turned colors, forgot my lines. Everything just went out the window. And he called me like an hour later and he's like, yeah, so you're very green and I'm not going to send you out anymore until you take some classes. Meanwhile, I've been taking classes. So it was this, you know, learning curve of finding who I am and finding myself in the audition rooms and getting the right representation. And it was a long journey. It was about a year into it that I auditioned for a film called Father of Invention. And that was my first.
And you got it.
And I got it.
That's fantastic. Yeah. I remember when I first started acting, like earlier in my career when I was trying that, and I would just get so nervous. I went to a student film audition. I thought I was going to vomit.
I still think I'm going to vomit every time I walk into a room. It, you know, gets easier, I guess, in a mm-hmm. sense, but the nerves are still there. That anxiety is still kind of there for me.
Yeah, for me now, like, auditions don't even faze me because I've worked so much on production side now that I'm just like, cool, if you need me, great, I'll be here. If you don't need me, I know it's not about me. There's, like, much bigger picture. But I think that that's one of the values of being able to do both. If you're a performer that's coming to LA, or even if you're a filmmaker, I do think you should try some acting too, just so you can communicate on both sides of the line. I think that it's super useful. And then also you won't vomit over student films because you've done them. You get what they are. That's great. So then now you've been auditioning for a few years. You've been getting films. And then what brought you to Elizabeth Blue?
So I did a film called Trials of Kate McCall, right before I had my daughter.
Uh-huh.
And then I took about 2 years off because I thought I'd, like, pop her out and be like, oh, I'm going back to work a day later. And then I was one of those moms that just stayed in bed with her for 2 years.
Yeah, you got to do mom stuff.
Yeah. And then Vincent was doing this film, and his husband, who's also the producer, worked with me on Trials of Kate McCall and told Vincent that he should bring me in.
Yeah.
And so I went in and auditioned for it. And here we are.
Here we are. Awesome. Now, that brings us to Vincent.
Well, Vin. Hello.
We're best friends now. We've known each other for a few minutes.
Oh, we're like this.
We're so close. Awesome. So I read online that you are a self-taught artist.
Yes.
And you didn't do film school. You didn't take that route.
I did not do any film school. I did not do any art school.
Yeah.
Well, I don't want to say, like, all my talents are, like, natural and everything, but, you know, but, like, everything just basically does come naturally
right.
to me, you know? I mean, there's no rhyme or reason to anything. I mean, if, like, anything I just set my mind to, I do. Like, so if I want to paint, I'm going to paint. If I'm going to draw, I'm going to draw. If I'm going to make a movie, I'm making it.
Just make the movie, because and that's something that we talk about a lot here on the show, is that the key to making it is making it, like, physically making it, like, actually go out there and do it.
Yeah,
that's the only way you get better.
Absolutely. And you can't think about it either. You can't give it too much thought. If you really want to do something, you just have to do it.
Yeah. Do the thing.
Yeah.
Do the thing. And that's what you've done. So you were a painter for a while.
I was a painter. And what had happened was, after my third collection, I had a curator and I had a publicist, and I was getting massive shows in the gallery scene in Los Angeles. I was showing at really prestigious galleries. And what had happened was, I was really creatively stifled for my next collection, and I couldn't come up with a good idea. So I pitched my husband, Joe Dane, this idea for a short film. And he was like, put it on paper. So I put it on paper, and one thing led to another. We wound up shooting it about 3 months later.
And was that Note?
And it was Note.
Right on.
My first short film was Note, starring August Rhodes, who also wrote 3 original songs for Elizabeth Blue.
Which the music was beautiful.
Thank you so much.
And just, like, did so much for the storytelling.
Thank you.
Yeah, lovely.
First short film was Note, and then after my medium was spray paint. So after Note, I wound up being diagnosed with cancer in March, and we shot the film in January.
Okay. And how long ago was this?
This was in 2013.
Okay.
And so what wound up happening was, they never specifically said that it was the spray paint, but I was like, you know what? I'm gonna make films now. So I went into remission 5 months. And
good.
Then,
happy to hear that.
Thank you. And and I was like, full into filmmaking now.
Right
and,
on.
Yeah, so just started writing scripts and yeah. So.
I love it. And you found, like, a new, less chemically toxic way to create art.
Exactly. It's just a different way of saying what I wanted to say.
Yeah.
So
it's great.
Yeah, it's just magnificent.
Do you find that your paintings were similar in emotion to your films? Because, like, I know Note is about suicide, and then this one's about mental illness.
Yes.
So Do you find that it was the same kind of topics?
Well, with my paintings, one of the things that my curator loved about me was, I always painted in collections.
Okay.
Usually when artists paint, they just paint a painting, and it's up to the curator to put together a show.
Mm-hmm.
And I would paint an entire collection, so there was really nothing for the curator to do except hang it on the wall.
Yeah.
And so, and I always told a story, and it was, you know, and there was always a through line, a beginning, a middle, and end.
Mm-hmm.
So I was really
You
familiar.
Were already telling stories.
I was already telling stories. At the time, I look back now, and I realized that I was warming up to this.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
It was a little ramp up before it. But you're already telling stories, which is something, the beginning, middle, and end, I think, for everything that people are creating. Like, you can do abstract, but I register things, and most people, I think, register things in a beginning, middle, and end.
Mm-hmm.
So when you can present a collection of art, or on your Instagram, or, like, any of those kind of things. I get people who are like, oh, your Instagram stories are great. It's because, like, I think of a beginning, middle, and end. I'm not just like, here's a dog, and here's a duck. I mean, sometimes that happens. But, you know, you think of a beginning, middle, and end. And even if it's very, very simple, as ABC, 1, 2, 3, it still connects with an audience in a way that people are built to get.
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah. So I think that's wonderful, wonderful little insight into being a painter.
Well, why, thank you, Mary Lou.
I think it's great. Awesome. So now you guys partnered up. Your husband said that you should read her for Elizabeth Blue.
Yes. Yeah, so what was happening was I'm in casting from day one.
Mm-hmm.
I love casting directors. I think they're amazing. Yeah. I think they do a phenomenal job. But I am not going to have a casting director break down for me who gets to the second round.
Right.
Who I get
you
want to
be
see.
There from the beginning.
I'm in there from day one. I want to see everything because it's something that I might see that the casting director is not going to
right.
see.
So, and you, because you have a bigger scope of the project.
Exactly.
And especially since you wrote it, mm-hmm. you know what you're looking for. So I think it's brilliant.
Yeah. So, you know, and to say, and it threw a lot of actors off because mm-hmm. my casting director would let them in and they would think I'm like the assistant. And I'd stand yeah. up and I'd introduce myself. Hi, I'm the writer director Vincent Sabella, and they'd be like, oh.
Ooh.
So it would add a little stress and tension. So we had seen about over 200 girls,
mm-hmm.
and the breakdown specifically said, come in, no makeup, very plain, simple, and nobody was getting it. It was Glamazon City.
Right.
It was, I can't even tell you what it was. And I was literally having a stress attack. I'm like, oh my God, Elizabeth has to be out there. And I was dead set on casting a no name.
Yes.
So I was like, oh my God, what are we going to do? How many more times are we going to run this breakdown? And Joe, my husband, who also produced Elizabeth Blue, as Anna said, he was like, you know, I worked with this great actress on this movie, Trials of Kate McCall. Do you remember when I did that? I was like, oh yeah, yeah. I was like, he was like, why don't you watch some of her work? So I watched her reel, I watched some of her work. I'm like, she's really good, she's talented. But I was like, she needs a meaty role. I'm like, this might just be up her alley.
Yeah.
So I was like, send her the script. So I sent her the script, and she came in, just simple as can be, but beautiful, and with this damaged quality behind her eyes, and she always laughs at me when I say this, but she just came in a denim shirt, jeans, with a white t-shirt underneath, and she sat down and she read three scenes, and I was so floored, and I was like, that's her. And you know, when she walked in, I was like, oh, please let her be good, please let her be
yeah.
good, because there was just something in her face
right.
that was just so beautiful. And when she left, I was like, That's her. And I called Joe.
And you waited a whole day to call me?
I called Joe and I was like, I want to call her now and give her the part. And he's like, no, sleep on it.
Yeah.
And so I did. And I woke up the next, because it's the producer side of him.
Yeah.
So I woke up the next morning and I was like, he's like, how do you feel? I'm like, it's her. And I called her and
it's great.
I didn't give her a call back, nothing. I was like,
you got it.
It's yours. It's yours.
Yeah.
So it was amazing.
That's wonderful. So then how was it for you in the audition process, walking in to see the director and how this connection happened?
I knew he was going to be there mm-hmm. because of Joe.
Yeah.
But it was nerve-wracking because you don't really see the director-writer there the first time. And also, this was really interesting because the character that I was playing is based on the writer-director. So mm-hmm. I knew I was, you know, he's basically, it's him.
Yeah.
I'm portraying his story.
Mm-hmm.
So it was really nerve-wracking.
Yeah.
But over the, you know, years that I've been doing this, I knew that if I just bring my true self to the room and, I mean, I memorized my lines. And mm-hmm. then I was like, how am I going to make this personal to Anna? And I went in there and did the scenes and I guess it went pretty well.
Yeah. And I thought you had such a wonderful portrayal of Elizabeth because, like, I feel like it could easily go into unbelievable. But
right.
I believed it all. So you acted yeah. that girl.
But I don't know. Like, the audition, I remember calling my mom after and she was like, how was it?
Yeah.
And I was like, I don't know.
Yeah. Interesting. Okay. Just because you didn't know about how well you did.
Well, something happens in audition rooms for me. There's like a vacuum that happens
uh-huh.
where when I walk out, I'm like, what just happened?
Yeah, that happens to me. yeah, but that's whenever when that happens, I always tell people, I'm like, that's when I know, like, I was really in it. whether, like, I don't know if I'm going to get it or not, but, like, in a performance or an audition, but if I, like, don't remember what happened, sometimes with these interviews, people are like, how'd the interview go? I'm like, I don't know.
Right.
Like, I'll listen tomorrow. Well, yeah. I hope it was good. I'm sure it was fine. But, yeah, that blackout as a creative, like, do you get that as a director? Like, with scenes, when you're working on scenes?
No, not really. I mean, you know, when I'm writing and, you know, especially when I'm writing, I can see everything from beginning, middle to end. Like, I see everything. Yeah. I see her picking up a cup. I see the way, you know, somebody touches her. It's all these little things that just, you know, I don't have any roadblocks in that manner. Like,
okay.
it's very visceral, and mm-hmm. I can see such a clear picture, especially when I'm so invested and so in it. I see everything.
Right.
Like even the music that's in the film, like, I wrote all that music into the script.
Great.
And the fact that we got every single song was just amazing.
Right.
So, you know.
Because
so,
you wrote it in there. You wrote it down.
Yeah.
You manifested that.
I did. Yeah. Yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah, that's what's something like, I'm just always told by my, like, my hippy-dippy friends. They're like, write it down. Now you're going to manifest it. That's great. Cool. Okay. So then let's talk about now Elizabeth Blue, the project. So we already talked about when you're writing it, you're seeing everything.
Mm-hmm.
Give us a quick synopsis for those that don't know what this movie is about.
So Elizabeth Blue is about a young woman who's recently released from a psychiatric ward. And when she's released, she's coping with ongoing episodes of schizophrenia while she's trying to plan her wedding.
Mm-hmm.
So, and basically what I did was I based this story on a very difficult year I had in 2010 when mm-hmm. all my medications had failed.
Right.
And it was either my husband was going to take a year off of work and work with my psychiatrist, Dr. Bowman, who's also who's played by Otto Wally, and we used the real name mm-hmm. Dr. Bowman. He also consulted on the film.
Great.
And it was either Joe take a year off of work, or I was going to have to be put into a psychiatric hospital
mm-hmm.
until they found the right regimen of medication.
Right.
And so he wasn't willing to do that, took a year off, and we got me on the right regimen, and here I am.
Good. So, oh, I'd love to hear that. Okay, so let's take a look at the trailer for Elizabeth Blue. She wants you to scoop a little bit.
Mom, Rand asked me to marry him, and I said yes. I plan on getting well, Mom. I have a new doctor. Okay, I want to have a life and be normal.
Tell me about you, Elizabeth.
I want a doctor who listens to me and not just medicates me.
Your daughter's mental health is... it's severe in nature. With all these medical conditions to manage, it's going to be very challenging.
I'm sorry, Dr. Bowman. I really don't understand what any of this means. Why do you love me so much?
I am prepared to share my life with you. And that means the good and the bad and whatever happens. I don't care. Because I know if we stick together, we can make it through anything.
Don't you dare point your finger at me, young lady. You are the reason that your father left and never looked back. You can't keep blaming me for that.
Do you know how scary it is when you don't know if life is real? Sometimes I feel cursed, like I'm living in a bad dream that I can't wake up from.
Stop! Stop!
My relationship is suffering. He says it's not, but I don't believe him. I want to believe him. And I don't want him to stop loving me because of this. He can't stop loving me because of this.
Elizabeth, love is a very strong emotion. It comes with unconditional circumstances. And a love like that cannot be broken by anything, including mental illness.
I'm so tired.
Oh, fantastic. What a wonderful trailer, too.
You.
And now, after seeing the film, like, that definitely really
captures
the movie, for sure. And then that's, you can actually see that out now at Arena It's playing
Arena Cine Lounge here in Hollywood.
Okay.
Every Sunday at 2:30.
Okay. Is it playing anywhere else?
No, because we had finished our 10-city theatrical release, and we just wanted to keep it in the theater, keep it present in people's minds.
Yeah.
So
if you're in Los Angeles, definitely go check out the movie. For everybody else elsewhere, you'll get to see it eventually. You can just keep watching this interview to get a good vibe of that. So we talked a little bit about where the story came from, and I love that it also is a movie with a cause. So you've connected with a charity for this.
Yes, we are fully involved with NAMI. Mm-hmm. It's the National Alliance on Mental Illness?
Yeah.
Okay.
That's what I had. National Alliance on Mental Illness.
Because I kept saying the National Alliance of Mental Illness, and Anna's like, no, it's not that. I'm like, okay.
The actress in me, I like to memorize the lines.
Yeah.
Exactly.
The words are the words.
Yes. So we're involved heavily with the National Alliance of Mental Illness, and they are, they promote it on their website, and when the film was released, it was actually released in conjunction with 20 other cities that were holding screenings across the country. And back in June, we were actually invited to Washington, D.C., to their national convention. And it was really awesome because we're in the same ballroom where they hold the White House Correspondents' Dinner. Mm-hmm. And so it's being shown on these giant four screen TVs, and it's just like overwhelming. And you're just like standing there and you're like, Oh wow. So it was, and so it was like a room packed full of people. It was like 700-800 people, and it was such an incredible experience. And afterwards there was a half hour Q&A, and it wasn't enough. And afterwards people just kept coming up to us. And it was such a humbling, amazing experience.
Yeah, and I bet like as the creators of something like this, that's such a sensitive topic, and then you show it, and I bet you get just a line of people who are like, thank you for telling my story or giving me something I can relate to.
Absolutely. I mean, Anna, especially, she's witnessed it with all the Q&As we've done, and she's like, I can't believe how many people are just so open now to just share. And it's really a truly incredible feeling, you know, to make a film and then have it recognized by NAMI, who is the largest mental health program in the country, and to say that you did it accurately and you did it, you did it a great job,
you did it justice,
is so, like, I can't even put into words what that means, you know, because when we set out to do this, I was determined either we're going to do it 100% accurately or we're not doing it at all.
Right. You have to. Awesome. And it seems like, Anna, you were on board with this kind of, you know, tough, heavy, meaty project. So you had got the script for your audition, and then once you got the whole script, was it what you expected?
Well, I got the whole script right away.
Oh, right away. Yeah. Okay, cool. Good. Then you knew what you were walking into.
Yeah, I knew what I was walking into. And, I mean, we had 3 months of prep, which I think was really important for the film.
Mm-hmm. What kind of things did you do to prep?
Well, Vincent and I spent every waking moment together, so we got to know each other really well. And that was a big part of it, because I was portraying him, essentially. And I never knew anyone with schizophrenia prior to signing on to do this project, and so I didn't know what it looked like exactly. And I remember there was one scene in the movie. It's this train scene where she wakes up and she's hearing a train noise.
The train is coming.
And so I had my biggest issue was with that scene. I was like, I don't know what it looks like. I don't know how I'm going to do it. I can't even imagine like how I'm going to approach the scene. And Vincent kept saying like, it'll come to you. Don't worry. And we were sitting in the chemistry reads.
Yes.
Waiting for the next guy to come in. And Vincent looked at me and said, do you hear that? So like any person, I responded. I was like, oh, yeah, it's that air conditioning dripping noise next door. And he kind of looked right past me, and he said it again. Do you hear that? And I was about to answer again, and then I was like, wait. He gets up, and he starts looking for this noise. And it's becoming more manic in a way and violent, and he's, you know, opening cabinets and doors and knocking things over the shelf. And his husband Joe was in the room, so you could tell Joe knew exactly what was happening right away. And he stood up, he tried to grab him, Vincent pushed him off, and then Joe grabbed the bag, got the medication out, and put Zafiris under his tongue, which is the same medicine that we use in the film. Within like a minute, Vincent went really still. They left. 10 minutes later, they came back. And Vincent was Vincent again. And he said, did I scare you? And I was like, yeah, you did. I was like, I was totally, because I was paralyzed. I had no idea what to do.
Right.
Like, thank goodness Joe was in the room. But then I was like, do you want to hear the good news? I get the train scene now.
Yeah.
Like, I totally understand it. And that was the process for me in learning who Elizabeth was and finding that character was seeing some of these episodes firsthand, which is kind of a rare gift in a way.
Yeah.
And being with a person that you're technically portraying. Mm-hmm. And then I got to work with Dr. Bowman, the real Dr. Bowman, and have all these sessions with him, which was very insightful.
Yeah. And I think that, like you said, that's it's a nice gift to be able to witness these things in person. And like a lot of the stuff that I saw in the movie is not things that I have ever seen in person. So having a film like this is a way that, like, if one person sees it that's never experienced that in real life, but then they have to deal with it in real life, then they're like, oh, I have a reference point. I don't need to be terrified. Let's go find some help.
Yeah.
You know, like, it's a great message.
Absolutely, yeah, definitely. I mean, and she was an unbelievable trooper. I mean, anything I asked her to do, she did. I mean, it was just unbelievable, the commitment level that she gave. And I don't do any rehearsals. I don't, my whole process is I really just talk to my actors, and I just want to get to know everything about them, everything. And I tell them, I'm an open book. You need to be an open book to me. And it's really because I need them to trust me when they're on that set.
Yes.
There's no right or wrong. And, you know, I remember one day, you know, she was like, you're not saying anything. I was like, you're doing what you need to do. You're doing your job.
Yeah.
So, you know, I mean, so,
you know, us actresses, we need the reinforcement.
Yeah.
We need the, like, pat on the back. You're doing great. Yeah. That's why we get into
this. But, you know, I mean, so for her, it was an interesting way of working. But for me, that's how I work. You know,
right.
I want to get to know everything about you in case I need to use something.
Right.
Or
just gives you access.
Yeah, I have access. And but it's mostly to make sure that my actors are safe.
Yes.
And they feel like they're safe. And they're like, if they do something wrong, like they don't feel like they're going to be ridiculed or anything, you know, because it's not about that. It's about making the best possible project, you know, we can make.
Yes.
And so, yeah.
And especially with this being such a tough role, like, or I would think it was tough. Like, dramatic stuff for me is really hard. Like, I am very empathetic. Like, I did a play where I had to do, like, a monologue about, I don't know, all these women who have committed suicide or been beaten to death. Or, you know, it was just very, very heavy. And I, for a month, would cry just because I felt it so much. So, like, I've kind of moved away from doing drama projects because I know I can't process that well. But what do you do to work through things like that? Like, how was life, like, outside of set versus on set?
There wasn't much of a life outside of set.
Okay.
We shot in 15 days.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I woke up at 5 and was on set by 6.
Mm-hmm.
And I woke up as Elizabeth and went to sleep as Elizabeth.
Right.
There's only maybe a 30-minute window where I had to sort of put Elizabeth away, and that's when I came home to put my daughter down.
Okay.
And when I was, you know, singing Baby Beluga and rocking her to sleep, like, I had to be mommy.
Mm-hmm.
And Elizabeth had to just, like,
wait,
hide
a second.
And just wait.
Yeah.
But it was weird because the second that I put her down, well, first of all, I passed out, like, right then and there because I was exhausted. But I would wake up in the state of mind of Elizabeth.
Yeah.
So I really had to live in that space.
Mm-hmm.
And, I mean, I totally get crying for a month when you did that monologue because it does something to you
because
it is real for you.
Yeah. Because you have to connect on a very, very, like, emotional, personal level.
Yeah.
Otherwise, it doesn't read.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where I think all the scenes in this were so, like, wonderfully acted and, like, beautifully shot. Because I think a lot of it were one shots.
Yes.
You just, like, followed them around handheld.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And that really, like, keeps you in the moment and it feels real. And you feel like you're there going through this with her. Like, whether you connect with it yourself or you've seen it in somebody else or you care about somebody, and that potentially could be them.
Yeah, and like you said, you know, like, you're going through this with them. And I also wanted it to feel like, you know, she was being watched also, like a kind of a voyeurism thing.
Yeah.
So, you know, so I was very hell-bent on it being shot Steadicam, all handheld. You know, very few things on sticks. And our cinematographer, Joel Marsh, God, he amazing. Was just yeah. amazing. I can't say enough about him. I cannot even wait to work with him again. He is just great personality. So wonderful. Through the 15 days, literally one time, me and him got into it.
Yeah.
And that's not bad for once, no. you know, but like everything was so planned, like so strategically, and we knew exactly what was going to happen. And, you know, it was just, it's an experience that, like, I will truly never forget from everything, just from writing it to her friendship to shooting it to being here right now. I mean, we're on such a ride and a journey. I can't even, I'm ecstatic.
Right. So then you say you don't do rehearsals.
Mm-hmm.
Then these handheld shots, was there a lot of choreography?
It was very much like just a quick walkthrough.
Mm-hmm.
That's all it really was. Like, okay. Especially like when we shot the Christmas tree scene, it was like, you know, and I really like the actors to really find their own mm-hmm. rhythm. Like, I don't want to get in there and be like, hey guys, walk over here and then go over there.
Right.
And, you know, I like them to find their own rhythm. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's really what we did, you know.
So then I assume you weren't on sound stages.
No.
So
no.
Where were you shooting at?
We shot in Pomona.
Okay.
And all our sets were literally a block away from each other. The only set was the bridal shop that we shot on Beverly Boulevard in mm-hmm. Los Angeles. And, you know, so Elizabeth's apartment actually was a mansion. And we took the master bedroom and turned it into her studio apartment.
Yeah.
So, so it was really
the location was really cool because it used to be a mental institution
in,
like, the 1920s. And then it only shut its doors like a month before we started shooting.
It was called the Lanterman Mental Institution, and it started in the 20s, and it took about 20 years to wind it down. And then when they finally did that, they gave it to, I forget the college that's right next door to it, Polytech?
Polytech.
Yeah. And they gave it to them, and they didn't know what to do with it. So they started sending it out for films.
Yeah,
they're like, locations. Let's open this up for locations. And we were one of the first films to have shot there. And it's such a magnificent location. And
but the energy.
Yeah. Yeah, and like plus, eerie. No, but it added to the film, especially mm-hmm. like the opening scene when we shoot in, like, it's all a single shot. And that was actually shot in a hospital. Mm-hmm. Like, it doesn't get more legit than that. So it was just fantastic. Yeah, there were so many things that were just amazing.
We spoke with Jim Frohno, who's a DP for Transparent. Their stuff is a lot of handheld, and they're on stages, but they build it
mm-hmm.
as if, there's ceilings and stuff outside the windows and things like that. So I'm like hypersensitive of Steadicam shots where I'm like, okay, how much planning did that happen? Or the actors just letting loose. Like, so their design is similar to what you were going at, where it's like, this is a space we have to move in, but we're keeping it handheld so the actors can do their thing.
Yeah, no, actually, what's hysterical is Anna was talking about the train scene, and in the script, I wrote it that she circles her apartment and goes through room.
Yeah.
And it was just crazy that we found this master bedroom, and it was a huge master bedroom with a connecting walk-in closet,
mm-hmm.
and then the bathroom was there, and then the closet was there, and it was like the heavens just parted, and it was amazing.
Yeah.
So.
That's great, and that's kind of how it works out. Sometimes you put it out there, and it's just like you put it on the paper. These are the things that you wanted, and it will find you.
Absolutely.
And even if it wasn't exactly that, you would have found a way to make it work. But mm-hmm. a lot of the times in projects I've put together, it works out.
Yeah.
You know, like even today, we were like, oh, Anna's going to come halfway through. I was like, no, this could be fine. And you made it. We're so excited to have you here. That's so great. So 15 days in Pomona in a house, an old mental institution.
It was a closed down hospital. Mm-hmm. And then where Dr. Bowman's office was, that was also a hospital, but that was actually, we had to build a couple of walls and stuff, but it all worked out.
Yeah.
It was
four locations total. apartment, Dr. Bowman Mental Hospital,
and the bridal shop.
Yeah,
which the bridal shop was not on that location, though,
right? So that was the one that was somewhere else. So, yeah. Mm-hmm. Really efficient filmmaking for 15 days,
mm-hmm.
short locations.
Yes.
Let's get into a little bit of on the fly stuff. Were there anything that happened on set that production wise you're like, all right, let's just slap this together. This is going to work.
No, actually, and I think it's because I am lucky enough to have such a seasoned producer, Jolene, yeah. that has been doing this for so many years, and we were so well prepared. You know, Anna had spoken about.
I just thought of one thing.
I actually have one thing too that okay. went a little bit awry, but it was okay, and I'll get to it. But no, like before we went into prep, we had soft prep, mm-hmm. so we had a good. Almost 6 months
yeah.
before we started shooting. So we were so well prepared. But the one thing that I was actually going to say that went a little awry was when we had to do all the water scenes. And for whatever reason, Art had poured... Art had poured the water. They sat it out in the sun. Uh-huh. Okay, but
the bathtub scene.
Yeah, it was the bathtub scene when she goes under. So Art had poured the water in, and it was warm. Okay, but by the time we got through shooting, like, the shower scene and uh-huh. other water scenes, she stuck her foot in the tub, and she was like, oh, my God, it is so cold. And yeah. I'm like, oh, you're being dramatic. And I put my hands in, and I'm like, oh, you're not being dramatic at all. Yeah. And so she was like, okay, I think I can do it. Let me just do it once. And so she sat down, and she was shivering.
And you have to pretend it's warm, and you're so yeah. relaxed in there.
And here I am. I come with a robe, and I'm, like, rubbing her. And I'm like, it's okay, it's okay, it's okay. I'm like,
can I tell the story from my friend? Because it's so good from my side of it. So, we do the scene, and he's like, I'm going to do it really fast. Like, we're going to get this in one take. I'm like, great. And so I go under, and I had to stay. So first of all, water's, going up my nose into my brain, and it's awful. And yeah. so they're getting the shot.
You're under a long time.
Right, because they said go under as long as possible and sort of almost make it uncomfortable. So it's like, yeah. okay, it's freezing water. So I go under, and I come out, and he's like, we got it. We got the shot. Everyone's so happy. I get out. He puts the robe on me, and he's like, oh, my God, I'm so happy. As I'm, dry and slightly warm, Joe comes in. He's like, guys, we have to do it again. And I was like, what? He's like, the boom reflection in the water.
No.
And I was like, what?
And we were all livid because we're like, there is no sound in the scene. Why is the boom in here?
Yeah. And so I had to get back in and do it again, and it was pretty awful. But by the way, the shower scenes were also freezing cold because yeah. the water heater just wasn't working in that building.
Okay, yeah, I was just like, why couldn't we just refill it with hot water? But yeah, no. It makes sense if it's broken.
Yeah, like the water, the shower scene in the beginning where I'm alone, and then the shower scene when I'm with my fiance. It's really hard to be sexy when you're under yeah. really cold water.
But she did it, girl. It was good.
She did it. She was a trooper. Yes. I mean, like I said, the commitment level that this girl gave, I mean, I should say woman, actually.
Mm-hmm.
It was, I am so blessed that she walked in the room. I can't, I love her to death.
Yeah.
For everything that she did. I mean, above and beyond. I mean, you hear about actresses that they're like, oh, yeah, I really went that extra mile. But Anna, she just embodied this character, and she didn't just go an extra mile. She was just in it, and she was going. And she was like, I'm doing this. I'm doing this. And it's just such an amazing feeling for a director, especially the kind of filmmaker I want to be, because I want to be the type of filmmaker actors want to work with.
Mm-hmm.
And
I think he succeeded. Right?
And write yeah. I want to write fantastic roles for actors.
Yeah.
And I want to get performances out of actors. And the fact that she gave me this gift is just yeah. amazing. So.
And I think you did a great job, because every scene I was looking at, I was like, man, that's great for her reel. That is great for her. Like everyone, because they're very solid scenes, mm-hmm. you know. So I think that's really great. So then. For me as an artist, I know that I always feel like a catharsis afterwards from whatever project it is. So with you, this is very personal to you because it's reflecting your own life, and then you're, working through all sorts of issues. Do you find, as the actress, as a director, a catharsis from this project?
You want to go first?
You can go first.
Yeah.
I answer.
I gotta tell you, with this project, it wasn't so much cathartic for me. Mm-hmm. I think I was just very much focused on telling a true, honest story that was accurate.
Yes.
And that was my focus. I think if we were talking about something being cathartic for me, it was when I did Note.
Okay.
Because that was based on me too, and you know, that was mm-hmm. my real suicide note in that film, and you know, it was about a 16-year-old kid who kills in the film, he kills himself, but mm-hmm. you know, and I didn't, so but that was a cathartic experience for me. Elizabeth Blue, not so much, because all I was focused on was making a fantastic film that was true, honest, and so accurate.
Right.
With great performances, so.
Right, yeah. And then it makes sense that it did feel so authentic because it was based off of real experiences for you, and you're using the real medications.
Mm-hmm.
Because that, I was like, wow, there was like so many. And mm-hmm. to have this just cocktail, like it's like a buffet of pills.
Yeah, no, all those.
In order to balance it out.
All those hallucinations, all the medications, those. All hallucinations I see, I hear, mm-hmm. all the medications I am on.
Yeah.
So, yeah, we stayed 100% accurate. And that's why we brought in my real psychiatrist, Dr. Bowman, because we wanted to make sure all the language was really accurate. And Adewale, he met with Dr. Bowman. Mm-hmm. And when casting Adewale, he was like, I don't look anything like him. Mm-hmm. And I was like, no, it's not about that. It's about you capturing his essence.
Yes.
And one of the main reasons I really went after Adewale was because he never had a role like this before. Mm-hmm. He always plays this mean, this tough guy. You've seen him on Lost. You've yep. seen him on Oz. Mm-hmm. You know, he was in Suicide Squad, Kill a Croc, yeah. you know, and so this was a total, you know, turn the table upside
really
down.
Gentle, caring.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, it was a totally different thing for him, but I loved seeing him in it, and I totally believed it.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, so
he's a pro.
Yeah, absolutely. So, but yeah.
Yeah. How about for you?
Yeah, I wouldn't maybe use that word for me either. This was my first true lead,
mm-hmm.
And it was this amazing journey, and I feel so blessed that I was on it and so proud to be a part of this film and to be able to tell your story and have people, you know, open up about their journey with mental illness. The biggest moment for me in this is my mom came up to me after seeing the film for the first time, and I mean, she was crying and really emotional. And she said, you know, I want to thank you for doing this film because I hope it allows people to talk about their mental illness, because her sister committed suicide and she was never diagnosed with anything. So for me, that was like this big moment in my life. And this film, I never hear my mom talk about this
yeah.
ever. And for her to come up to me and say that was probably one of the biggest gifts.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and I'm just really enjoying this journey.
Yeah, because it's opening up dialogue for you on a personal level.
Yeah.
So imagine what it's doing for people who are watching it.
Well, I mentioned that I didn't know anyone with schizophrenia prior to signing on
uh-huh.
to the film. But after the film came out, I had 5 different people who I know that are in my life come to me and say, my mother, my brother,
wow.
my niece, Mike. And it was really shocking in a way, because I'm mm-hmm. like, wait, I've known you for 10 years. What do you mean your mom has schizophrenia? But it's not something people really talk about.
Yeah.
So that was really kind of incredible to see that.
Mm-hmm. So, and then the schizophrenia is just to like clarify for people who might be watching, like, what is it that causes? Is that causing the hallucinations?
Well, yes. I have a very specific type of schizophrenia. Mine's, if you want to put it in correct terms, it's schizoaffective disorder.
Okay.
And basically I can hear, see, and I even can feel the hallucination, and they can touch me, I can mm-hmm. touch them. Also I suffer from OCD, depression, and anxiety.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, so it's a full laundry list.
Right.
So it's a lot of awesome things, you know. you know, and you know, I'm not trying to make a joke out of it, but you know, I have to laugh.
Yeah,
because if you don't laugh, you'll literally go insane.
Yeah,
you know, and I have too many wonderful things happening in my life for that to happen.
Yeah,
so you know, I mean, and you know, I'm really really happy and excited that this is really resonating with audiences. I mean, on Rotten Tomatoes, we have 100% audience score, which is insane. It's so fantastic. So,
yeah,
you know,
congratulations.
Thank you. And like, so it's really resonating with audiences, and it's just a fantastic feeling. It's mm-hmm. It really, really, truly is.
Yeah.
So.
And then you're like proof that, you know, people who are dealing with mental illness, like for me, I know I deal with depression, right? Mm-hmm. So that will sometimes keep me from wanting to create, but you can flip it around and you can utilize that. You can have that fuel your art.
Absolutely. Like, you know, I had a woman ask me, she was like, how are you able to do all this? And my answer was, I was like, I just, you know, if I'm having a bad day, I force myself to get out of bed. I force myself to take a shower, and mm-hmm. I force myself to get started. Like,
yeah.
You know, I'm not going to waste the day. And don't get me wrong, I have my bad days, mm-hmm. you know? I mean, like, you know, I'll text, like, I've texted her and been like, I can't get out of bed. You know, but I think that's everybody. I think everybody yeah. has those days, you know? But... Well, you have to move. You have to just get going. You gotta just do it, you know? And you know, having any kind of illness, mental illness, whether it's mental illness, whether it's cancer, whether it's HIV, whether it's multiple sclerosis, mm-hmm. you know, if you have a dream, if you have anything, you just gotta do it. You just do it. Don't let anything stand in your way, you know? Just go for it.
Yeah.
Just go.
That's wonderful advice. So. Good. Oh my gosh. And I hope that this film really does inspire people to, you know, especially now knowing, like, cause I didn't know that this was character was based off of you.
Well, now you do. Now you do.
Now I know. You know, it makes me kind of feel a little bit differently about the movie because it's like, oh, you accomplished a feature-length movie mm-hmm. and have all these things that you're dealing with on a real, real-life level. So, like, yes, you have to go out there and do it.
Yes.
You can still go do it.
Yes.
You know, and taking your mental health very seriously, mm-hmm. just like it's mentioned in the film a few times, where, you know, they're like, take your mental health seriously, you know, seek help if you need to seek help. You know, there's organizations out there with information and
tons.
It's really, really wonderful.
There's real, like, NAMI is one of, you know, they're phenomenal. I mean, there's so many different outlets that you can reach out to, mm-hmm. you know, like, for the Gay and Lesbian Center, they have a great mental health center. You know, I'm totally blanking on other names right now, but there's so many out. All you do is Google,
yes.
And you know, there's free mental health, and of course there is the mental health that you pay for, or the like psychiatrist you pay for
right.
and stuff, and you know, not everybody can afford that, but mm-hmm. there is other options,
right?
So
that's great. So to wrap up our talk about the movie, I want to ask both of you, as an actor and as a director, what advice do you have for creators in making a project that is such a sensitive issue? Maybe it's not necessarily mental illness, but if they're dealing with any kind of topic that's sensitive, like what kind of things as an actress did you use to cope or delve in to a topic like this?
Well, I think for me, it was really important to just be, you know, as accurate as I could be to my understanding, get all the information, first of all, do your own research. Mm-hmm. I read a 500-page book on
schizophrenia. It seems like both of you did a lot of, like, research.
She didn't say where she got the book from.
I got
it. Yeah, great.
You know, Dr. Bowman helped because the way he made it real for me, I asked him, I said, how can I make this real for me? Like, mm-hmm. how can I understand what schizophrenia looks like?
Yeah.
And he asked me if I ever had a bad dream. Mm-hmm. Have you ever had a nightmare? Now, I was a new mom. I had, my daughter was a little under two, I think. And since I had her, I had these awful nightmares about something really terrible happening to her. And I would wake up, run into her room, check on her, and then be able to go back to sleep telling myself, that was just a dream. She's fine. Mm-hmm. Go back to sleep. And so he said to me, imagine you had that same nightmare, but it was not contained in sleep.
Oh.
It happened to you during the day while you were awake, and you have no way of telling whether it was a nightmare or a reality.
Yeah.
And for me, that was like this big aha moment.
Yeah.
And that made it personal to me, or I was able to make it personal. And I just really did the research. And if you're going to portray something so serious, then you should probably know a little bit about it.
Prep, like, talk to professionals.
Yeah.
Prep, talk to people who actually have experienced it themselves and find a way to connect it.
Yeah, for sure.
That's great advice. And how about as a filmmaker, what advice you have for other filmmakers who might be trying to, you know, portray something personal and heavy like this?
I would say make sure you really have a grasp on what you want to make and make the film you want to make.
Yeah.
Because if you don't make the film you want to make and you have too many people in your ear, you're not going to be satisfied.
Yeah.
And I'm so blessed and honored that I got to make the film I wanted to make.
Yeah. Did you find that you had some resistance from people on the way that your vision was going?
No, good. Actually.
You're
I mean,
my movie's happening.
No, I, like I said, very fortunate and, you know, and not, you know, it's something you don't hear about. You know, it takes filmmakers years and years just to get a short film made, and there's a struggle, you know? So to have this whole experience and just everything just be so amazing, and, you know, I don't want to come across and sound like how can I say this? Like,
I don't know what you're about to say. I'm like pulling you back. I'm like, I know what you're saying, but I feel push you away.
Like, I don't want to come across like, you know, like, oh, it was so easy for me and everything. But, you know.
Oh, please don't come across that way.
No, and I definitely don't. And it's a difficult journey and ride for everybody. But, you know, for me with this journey, it's been nothing but just a pure pleasure. So.
Good. Like, you've enjoyed the journey. I think both of you
mentioned
that.
He's not giving himself enough credit because he's saying, you know, it was, I mean, when you were auditioning Tim, like, you had such a rough time with that because this is a hallucination he has seen since he's 14. Uh-huh. And now he has to audition the character that's going to play this really nasty.
That was a little bit struggling.
That
yes.
was a really hard day for you. And on set,
that's the negative
train
talk
scene.
Negative talk character.
Yeah.
And the train scene, actually. Yeah. We shot it once, and I had she after we shot the first take of it, she fell to the floor and she was just sobbing. And I went over and I kissed her on the head, and I was like, "I have to leave set."
Yeah.
And you know, I have never had to leave a set before. Mm-hmm. And my husband, we prepped the whole cast and crew. Everybody knew that would possibly happen.
Yeah.
And Joe stepped in and he finished directing the scene. And, you know, so, you know, that was a struggle. And thank you for remembering that and pointing that out.
You're welcome.
This is why she's here.
Yeah. Yeah, because it's easy once you get into the, you know, now we're in press and we're talking about the movie. And, like, after a movie, you're just like, everything was wonderful. It was great. But then, you know, you remember those things where you did have roadblocks that you had to
push
through.
So, yeah, there was roadblocks as far as me with my mental stability.
Right.
Yeah, so.
Yeah, especially because you're looking at it in the face.
Absolutely.
Like, very literally, like, in casting these characters, so.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's you know, it becomes a little nerve-wracking at times.
Yeah. So then I would think some advice for creators is just to, like, be kind to yourself also while you're in the process of these things, you know? Like, you prepare yourself. It sounded like your crew was prepared for these scenarios potentially being problematic.
Mm-hmm.
And then you handle it.
Yeah.
And then you did it. You were kind to yourself, stepped away, came back, made a movie.
Yeah. Yeah. No, seriously. Like, I would come back on set and they'd be like, "Are you okay?" Yeah, I'm good. What are you talking about?
Yeah. Like, just in case. Cool. Awesome. Great. So tell me, Anna, what is coming up next for you?
I don't know yet.
Yeah?
I have no clue.
Oh, my gosh. The world is your oyster. You've got so many good scenes for your reel.
Yeah, we'll see. Okay. You know, this has been such a great journey. Mm-hmm. I did a few other films after and that are not out yet. So just kind of enjoying the ride and not looking to get anywhere, but sort of trying to really live in the moment.
Great. I think that's wonderful. And for you, anything new?
You know, like she said, just enjoying this journey and this ride. And I don't know what opportunities are going to present themselves after all this is said and done. But we'll see. Next year, I'm definitely going to shoot a short film.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, but we'll see.
Yeah, I see really, really fabulous things for both of you. Awesome. Anna, tell them where folks at home can find you on social media.
Oh, wow. Social media. Okay. Yeah.
Don't tell them your address. I don't want to
know. My phone number is.
On Instagram, I'm at Anna A. Schaefer, S-C-H-A-F-E-R. And I believe that's my Twitter handle as well, but I don't ever tweet.
You don't do that?
I don't know.
Tweet either. I do Instagram through tweet. Like, I'll Instagram something and just, like,
that's
what I do. See, I forgot my password, so I like anytime we try to do that, it's like, "What's your password?" I'm like, crap, I forgot. And then it's, like, not that important, so just leave it on Instagram.
It's angry over at Twitter anyway. I just stay on
no,
Instagram.
No, we're so Instagram people. Like, yeah. I even stopped Facebook, so, yeah.
Me too. I love Instagram. All right, Vin, tell them where they can find you on Instagram.
Vincent_Sabella.
Good.
On Instagram. And I'm actually on Twitter, Vincent Sabella.
Okay.
So
awesome. Yeah. Thank you so much for joining me, guys. I really
thank you for having
this
us. This is amazing. Yes, yeah,
told you
great.
It was
you're so cool and just like on the fly.
Here we are. We did the show. Awesome. Again, guys, I'm Mary Lou Mandel. You can find me all over the internet at Mary Lou Mandel, and we will see you next time on the Fly Filmmaking.
From producers Maria Menounos, Kevin Undergaro, Phil Svitek, and the entire Popcorn Talk Network, we would like to thank you for tuning in. For questions or comments, be sure to visit popcorntalk.com. I'm Sir Richard Wentworth, and this has been a presentation of the Popcorn Talk Network.
The views expressed herein are those of the hosts only and do not necessarily reflect the views of the Popcorn Talk Network or its owners or principals.